Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now, here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today, I have Donald Jeffries back on the show. He's an excellent reporter, investigative journalist, writer, you name it. But today, we're going to be bouncing back and forth between his two books that I think all of you should buy as a gift set for the holidays, for everyone you know, okay? Survival of the Richest and Crimes and Cover-Ups of American Politics, because we're still living through the exact same crap that we've been living through since this country started. So I'm really happy to have Donald back on the show. Good morning, Donald.
Hey, Maria, thanks for having me back on. It's always a pleasure.
Always my pleasure. I hear you have some good news on your Survival of the Richest book.
Yeah, Naomi Wolf, who was, and I was amazed with people like her or Ron Paul, you know, people that are pretty big figures to me that I've admired for a long time, end up admiring my work. I mean, it's really flattering and wonderful. So she loves Survival of the Richest almost as much as you do. And she committed to writing a foreword, and I've already seen the version she sent me. It's really great. And I mean, she compared me to Robert Reich, you know, the guy that was in the Clinton administration and so forth. So,
yeah, I think he puts out great work.
Yeah, exactly. Economically, I think we probably are very similar. But I think it's coming out in March, so I'll have more details on that. I'm sure I'll be promoting it nonstop on social media.
Well, it's a book everybody needs to read, both your books, because without this knowledge, they will never, in any shape, manner, or form, understand what the issues are that we're living through.
Yeah, absolutely. Most people are just the products of what they get from their sources, and we all get information from various sources. And I try to go all around and get to, obviously, alternative sources, because, I mean, I couldn't have written Hidden History, especially, or the new one, Crimes and Cover-Ups in American Politics, 1776, 1963, without going to those alternative sources, because the mainstream sources simply aren't going to, you know, they're not going to publish letters like the one I published in the new book, from the Union soldier, mm-hmm. Thomas Myers, which is, it's not a theory. I mean, he wrote and he detailed the common theft that was going on where they were stealing property from people, and that's how General Sherman was getting a cut of it. I mean, that's not a theory, but that's the kind of evidence that you really have to scour to try to find, because you're not going to find it anywhere in the mainstream media, and the court historians are going to ignore it.
Absolutely, and the truth of the matter is there was a time when you could trust what you looked up on the internet, but even that has been so slashed, that's the best word I could think of, slashed, that it's so limited to what you can find now compared to what you used to be able to. You know, just as I'm on another one of my 30-day bans on Facebook. YouTube demonetized my channel. You know, yesterday I put out a very powerful news show and I got a great response from it, saying basically it was the best show I've done all year because of my passion delivering the news. And the same person said, why don't you put it up on YouTube? Well, YouTube gave me a couple of strikes a couple of years ago. So I had to go in and delete all my, what I consider political and important shows, just to keep my YouTube channel. So it amazes me that so many people are able to keep their channel, even though now they've recently demonetized my channel, when I put up basically what I consider my fluff shows. If you get targeted by the powers that be, they have a way of just squashing you, which, as you as an author know, the control that there is in the publishing business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm amazed that I've been able to get published what I have been published. But I see you getting down all the time, and it's awful. You know, as a civil libertarian and someone who believes in absolute free speech, and in fact, I think most people, one of the things I learned writing this new book was I didn't know, we've all heard that expression, well, you have free speech, but you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, I found out where it came from, and I discovered it during the course. It came from the World War One era, when Woodrow Wilson was basically reviving the Alien and Sedition Acts that John Adams had, back in, you know, that Jefferson and all the early Democrats were appalled at. And he was throwing people like Eugene Debs, a great early socialist, in jail for opposing World War One. Well, the Supreme Court, under so-called liberal hero Oliver Wendell Holmes, Chief Justice, he wrote the opinion, and he's the one that came up with that term. Well, you have free speech, but you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. So I think very few Americans know where that came from. Basically, that expression was used as a justification for throwing someone who was protesting World War One in jail. So I'm an absolute free speech purist, and I don't even think, I think that was just kind of an absurd, you know, analogy to come up with so that people would say, well, that's true. You know, you can't, I mean, how many people are going to do that anyhow?
Right.
But, and we're seeing that today because YouTube is using that. We saw recently the horrific, I posted on social media, she's worth, I think, $450 million. And she's, and as far as I can determine, the only thing she's contributed to, I forget her name, to society is this, she's bragging about shutting down. She said, we've removed like 70% of controversial content. Mm-hmm. And she even admitted, she said, because our people were actually being persuaded by some of it. It's like, what? And she's not only being, she's bragging about it, but of course the journalists, I forget what it was, 60 Minutes or one of those other absurd programs, but they didn't question her and say, why are you, so you're in business to shut down controversial content? But they celebrated it. So, no, it's been successful, and we see the results of that. And I'm involved right now, and I don't know what I'm going to be doing. I just signed on and said I would support it. It's called the Stop Bitburning Campaign. And it's trying to stop what, basically it's digital book burning and things, all these YouTube channels that are being shut down and people like you that are being constantly being thrown off Facebook. And I'm not sure where we're going to go with it. And I keep trying to tell the people running it, because a lot of the people are pro-Trump that have been shut down. And I tell them, you really need to open this up to everyone, because otherwise you're going to be marginalized. And so as a civil libertarian, I support the right of the views I disagree with.
Well, it goes right back to, we can go right back to survival of the richest. When you look at Facebook, who has no problem taking money from Russia, has no problem taking money from the Saudis, has had no problem taking $2 million a month from Trump, or no problem posting political ads that they know are false. And yet, they have seemed to have a problem with me for, a meme that I was punished for in 2017 that they decided to hit me again for the same meme that I didn't reuse another 30 days. So even when it comes to social media, if you have money, you could get away with murder there. But if you don't, you won't.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's with everything. I mean, if you have money, as you said, you literally can get. I mean, we've seen people get away with murder. And that's why I discussed it with you. I probably will be writing down the road this. It's calling out to me, this book about the our justice system, because it just, you see the same kind of disparity there.
Absolutely. I'm sure you saw the story that Harvey Weinstein ends up because of his money, obviously, not because of his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. He ends up walking. He's got to pay a fine that won't come out of his pocket. And where's the justice in that?
No, it's incredible. I mean, I'm tabulating these stories to keep. I mean, I find them everywhere. I think there was a juror that fell asleep or something and was sentenced to 10 days in jail for it.
Right.
I mean, crazy stuff on.
Well, he was a black kid. That's why.
Yes, exactly. And so, of course, you find that kind of. And I would argue still that it's mostly because they don't have any they don't have any economic means, and most people don't realize that. And I publicize this in Hidden History and Survival of the Richest both. I think the average, most people that are charged with crimes, because they can't afford a lawyer, they get a public defender assigned to them. And the public defender, I think, spends less than 5 minutes on average with their clients. And almost all of that, like if you didn't do it or you claim you didn't do it, they don't care.
No, they're going to tell you to take a plea because they're getting paid like 50 cents to represent you.
So, I mean, I don't think people realize, And if you watch, I watch a lot of these investigation discovery programs because another interest I have is like mysterious things, people disappearing and things. I've always had that interest in that. So I watch a lot of them just to kind of, and a lot of it's for research because I'm starting to realize every time it's amazing to me how many people, the juries just want to convict.
Oh, yeah.
What is a person? It's a rubber stamp thing. It's almost impossible to get off unless you can cause some kind of controversy in the media where they might show a little, it's not that it very happened, you know, OJ type of thing or something where it becomes a racial thing. But, and of course, he had celebrity as well, too. So he had kind of both things going on. And he had a dream team. But for the average person that comes in there with their public defender, the jury, it doesn't matter. And I see reasonable doubt all the time. It would be hard for me to convict anybody because
I was called for jury duty. And during the break, I told the judge, there's no way I'm ever going to side with the cops on this case. So you might as well let me go now. And, you know, but when you sit there and you're there all day, you're in a stuffy room all day, wasting your day, you're exhausted, the air stinks, okay? There's no air moving through the system. The last thing you want to do is stretch it out. You want to get out of there as soon as possible. And that could be part of why people, you know, are in such a rush to judgment. Who wants to serve jury duty? Everybody knows the system sucks. Everybody knows they're not getting paid. They're losing a day off. You know, whatever. And then you look at these, and I've watched them, you know, I've sat in courtrooms. You watch these public defenders come in, they've got a stack of folders in their arms, they're dropping papers all over the floor, they don't even know their client till they meet them right before the judge, and they're just trained to tell them, here's a plea, take the plea. And, you know, most Americans don't realize, Donald, that not over 90% of Americans take a plea, whether they're innocent or guilty.
Yeah, and that's what we're saying. And, you know, thank goodness for DNA evidence because it's proving so many people have been in prison for decades even. And even when that happens, the system still fights. They're like kicking and screaming. They, even though they have scientific evidence that shows, well, you were wrong, they don't want to admit they're wrong. And so they still make them sometimes wait months, even additional years in prison, and then they don't want to give them anything. I mean, I would think, you know, you can't ever make up for this year's lost, but I would think at least $1 million for every year you're held behind bars, I think this would be kind of a very modest amount to give, but they don't want to do anything like that, and it just shows, again, the corruption, you know, the entire thing from this country is so crumbling. There's not a single part of it that I can find anywhere that isn't tainted by this corruption. And it's beyond, I almost want to start calling it fourth world America because I don't even know third world countries are this bad in many cases, but not having lived there. But we're certainly not a first world country anymore. And it shows in every aspect, the medical industrial complex, the military industrial intelligence complex, prison industrial complex, which is part of our awful injustice system. It's everywhere.
Right. Well, you know, listen, I've been saying for years on my show that the whole system needs an enema from top to bottom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said we need a giant vacuum cleaner to vacuum out because there's so few good people, and I know there are good people out there at all levels. There are honest people, but the problem is they're so outnumbered that, you know, if you're outnumbered even 10 to 1, let alone 100 to 1, what can you possibly accomplish? You're a lone voice crying in the wilderness, so you need a giant vacuum cleaner to vacuum everybody out that's in, you know, to get rid of them and have new leadership in there, but I don't know how you do that.
There's a lot that needs to be done, but listen, we can't even get Citizens United overturned, let alone to try to set term limits for Congress, term limits for the Supreme Court, term limits for every judge in this country.
One of my populist proposals that I've actually heard other people that are interested in as well, I think we ought to change the House of Representatives because we can't, for whatever reason, whether it's because of voter fraud, which I know exists, or just voter stupidity, and they just can't halt themselves from voting these clowns back in, to have 96% of these incumbents reelected every election is a lower turnout than we had in the Russian Politburo, the height of the Soviet Union. It's shameful. And I think the only way to remedy it would be to go to just kind of a lottery system and have people serve 2 years registered voters, much as you do jury duty, and you would really get, talk about diversity, you'd get a real cross-section of people then. You would have actual working people and poor people, rather than right now where everybody that enters Congress is rich when he enters.
Well, we did see a lot of diversity in 2018. You know, we saw a lot of people of color. We saw regular working people. We saw a lot more women than ever before. But then they get demonized from the moron in chief, you know, the squad. They're this, they're that. Killed them. They're Muslims. Killed them all. This one's got a hijab on. She should be killed.
I think all that would be really taken away if we had a system like that where none of these people were politicians. And if they just served 2 years and went home, that originally was what the founders intended. Mm-hmm. They didn't intend to have these career politicians. I mean, George Washington stepped down after 8 years. They went to Washington, they figured, okay, we're doing our job, we're statesmen, so we don't have any statesmen left. So I think we have to do something like that where you just have average people go in there. Presumably they couldn't be that corrupted.
Right.
And so I think that would be that's the way to do it. I mean, right.
Like Jimmy Stewart movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yes, you'd need something. I mean, you saw even back then, they recognized in 1939, I think things were a lot less openly corrupted, certainly less incompetent then. That's why I think, Maria, the biggest difference now between the period I'm writing about in this book or in Hidden History is that up until maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I don't know when it began, but where we started this idiocracy, you know, really creeping in, you had competence, even though, you know, Jagger, Hoover, Richard Nixon, all these people were corrupt, but there was a competence about them. You couldn't see them tweeting or, you know, getting up in somebody's face. They wouldn't do that. And the machinery worked better. The roads got plowed. The power didn't go off. That kind of thing, and the roads weren't in bad condition yet because the infrastructure was newer. You know, it hasn't been addressed for 60 years now. Mm-hmm. So I think what we have now is a mishmash of this systemic corruption that's everywhere and this monumental incompetence. And with the election of Trump, it's gone into overdrive because you have this circus atmosphere that is almost beyond belief.
It's worse than a reality TV show. I mean, I try to watch as much as I can of the impeachment, but I got to tell you, yesterday, when I was watching some of it, every time, you know, one of these Republicans came on with their word salad that made no sense at all, luckily I was listening on a headset, so I could just unplug until they were off, because I can't listen to it. It's almost like it's an insult to anybody with any level of intelligence. And, you know, with all the back and forth, they still voted for a war budget, okay?
They still voted
for the Space Force, which, you know, Bruce Gannon of Keep Space for Peace has been fighting against for the 20 years I've been on this show.
Right.
And yet they want to cut food stamps in time for Christmas.
Exactly.
But we don't have money, you know, we don't have money for that. And then, you know, one of the biggest stories that should still be on the front page of every paper in this country, which it's not, was the release of the Afghanistan papers. $2 trillion based on nothing but FUBAR.
Yeah. And you said it right there. The military industrial complex is, it always gets its way. And it lost a very significant thing the other day. This is the same Trump who cannot sign any of the executive orders he promised to do something about immigration or the vaccine autism commission, none of that. Somehow he doesn't have the time to do that or the power, according to the people who still support him, but he always finds the time to sign an executive order like he did the other day, which was this odious thing that might have been written in Israel about banning anti-Semitism on college campuses, and where he redefined Judaism as a not a religion. I mean, it was very...
Right, as a nationality.
Yeah, a very curious thing. And you just sit there and shake your head at it because you understand that Trump is making Israel great again. He's MAGA. It's not MAGA. It's MAGA.
He's making Russia great again. He's made Saudi Arabia great again. He's made North Korea great again.
Yeah, so when you see this kind of stuff, those are the kind of things I look for that are... you know, the circuses, the bread and circuses they show you, because it's become, really become like WWE theater. And I've written so much about Trump where I think that I don't think there's any doubt left that this guy was, he's, how much of him is actually real, I don't know. But he's an actor. He was selected and not elected. And I think he was selected to divide the country.
Well, and he's done a great job of destroying every avenue of our government, from the EPA to the Supreme Court to the media to the FBI. I mean, you name it.
And what has happened is that because he's this late, you can't even, like, I can't, like, here I'm coming on the show maybe to talk about my book that ended in 1963, but I can't go on any interview without Trump coming up because he's in the middle of everything now.
Absolutely.
And he's this giant lightning rod, and the politics of personality has never been so clear. So everybody now has chosen sides, and you either have people who hate him or love him, and there's hardly anybody in the middle. And the problem is, I talk all the time about it. It's not important whether he gets reelected or anything like that, or impeached or any of that. What happens after Trump? Because he has changed politics so much, and there's nobody else like him. None of the other Republicans are even remotely Trump-like figures. I think most of them hate him, actually. But and the Democrats are what they've always been. You know, they're just kind of watered down. I don't know what they are anymore, but they're not.
Well, the old crew of the Democrats need to go.
Yeah.
They all need to go. And you know what? Once again, we might as well use the term repeatedly. We are in the midst of the worst taxation without representation I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
Congress votes against what the people want all the time.
All the time. They never, and that's why, you know, and that's why when I talk about this book, Crimes and Cover-Ups in American Politics, 1776, 1963, it started out, as you know, with the founders and what they, and I, not only have I never seen, I don't think there's ever been a situation in the history of the world where those who govern the people are supposedly sworn to uphold a constitution that they completely ignore. They have no adherence to at all. But the fact that we fought the revolution for two main reasons, and one of them was, as you said, no taxation without representation, and the other one was the consent of the governed, that people have a right to consent to those who govern them. And as Thomas Jefferson said, you know, if they don't no longer agree to it, they can alter it, abolish it. The tree of liberty has to be watered with the blood of tyrants every 20 years, that kind of stuff. Those are the beliefs of the founders, the people that we used to idolize. Once Abraham Lincoln got through with it, since the 1860s, when the southern states no longer consented, however you look at it, and tried to secede and were crushed, and almost a million Americans were killed in the conflict, the government was altered forever because that one of the two main concepts that guided the revolution was shattered forever, because clearly you don't have the right to consent to in America to consent to those who govern.
No, of course not. Or they'll sig the dogs on you. You know, I was reviewing your Crimes and Cover-Ups this morning, and I was reading again about another president who was deified like he was a god, Franklin Roosevelt, and how Franklin Roosevelt turned the IRS on his enemies.
He was the first one. I mean, Nixon, you know, so many of the things we blame. Again, I'm no fan of Nixon. I grew up, when I was a kid, my father and my family were Democrats, and they hated Nixon. Nixon was a dirty word in our house and loved Kennedy. So I'm a product of that. So I relished Watergate, you know, and all that stuff. But looking back on it now, writing about those things, Nixon looks pretty good in comparison.
Right. It looks like an angel walking through the streets. But I wanted to talk to you a couple of facts that I got this week that I did on my new shows. And I know you have a subscription, but I don't know how anybody can keep up with my shows. I wonder sometimes how I keep up. But some of the facts were that, you know, in this great economy we keep hearing about, I don't see any proof or evidence of it. But I had a report yesterday, you know, with all these great jobs and low unemployment, that the majority of people between the ages of 24 and 52 earn $18,000 a year. And another stat was that 51% of Americans earn under $30,000 a year.
Wow. Okay. So it's basically it's about what I've been talking about, that 50, but the bottom half that makes less than $27,000. So that's pretty much, and all the statistics, they vary a little bit. But they all tell you the same story, that basically half the country has nothing.
Right.
You're making 18,000 or even 27,000. You can't live independently anywhere except maybe in some parts of the deep south, maybe. But you might be able to get a little
apartment. Maybe Appalachia.
Yeah, Appalachia, something like that. But to, you know, for the stats, and this is, I think, the most disappointing aspect about Trump, because so much of his rhetoric in the campaign was revolutionary, and one of the things he said, he called out the fake unemployment stats, which people like me have been doing because they were changed in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
One of the many terrible things that happened under Bill, many anti-liberal things that happened under Bill Clinton. And that was what it was designed to make it so whoever was in the White House, and you see Democrats and Republicans both bragging about their figures and how many jobs they've created,
right,
not gross national product, things that don't mean anything to average and working people. But at that time, up until that point, unemployment stats were reported fairly accurately, where they went with people who are actually unemployed. They decided to change at that time so that they only count people who are presently receiving unemployment benefits. And when I was laid off from my job last year, I'd be fired unfairly. I've never been considered unemployed because I never got unemployment benefits. There are millions of people out there like me, and Trump knows it, and he called it out during the campaign and said, you know, this is my people tell me it could be as high as 40%.
Mm-hmm.
He's now bragging about the exact same, and so are his people that
right.
cheered him on, did that, the exact same phony stats. They haven't changed the way they do it. It's a joke.
No, of course
it's so,
not. You know, years ago, I don't know if you were familiar with Bob Chapman, but Bob used to put out the International Forecaster.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of world leaders subscribed to his newsletter because they knew it was truth. But Bob was a regular co-host once a month with me for several years before he died. And all those years ago, God's got to be 10 years, he would say that they don't count the people who gave up looking for work, the people whose unemployment ran out. And in order to just keep the job situation or market the way we need it to be, you have to create 250,000 jobs a month.
Right.
Now, that hasn't been happening in a very long time. And even all those years ago, he told my audience that the true unemployment figure was more like 23.5%.
Oh, I think it definitely is. And again, if you go, as I have a little bit now, I'm writing now, and luckily I'm in better shape because I actually had a halfway pension and a 401k and stuff, which a lot of people don't have. But again, I'm older,
mm-hmm.
and if people that are young now, they're not getting pensions. It's laughably ironic that we continue to see, and I talked about this in Survival of the Richest, about all these politicians.
Mm-hmm.
that are getting the best pensions in the world, and how
right? Why are we still giving them their salary once they leave? Why? Why can't they do what all the rest of us do?
Or people that don't have pensions themselves and can't afford it anyhow. Most of these people in Congress, they don't need pensions because they can. Almost all of them can get a job with speaker's fees.
Of course. Well, how do they become millionaires and multi-millionaires on $174,000 a year?
Exactly, and we know, so it's shameful, and certainly the survival of the richest aspect has gotten worse now, and I don't know at this point, you know, what can be done, because you're getting...
We don't have a choice anymore. That revolution Thomas Jefferson talked about, the founding fathers, the Declaration of Independence, I mean, it's time to exercise those rights now, because if we don't, we'll never have any rights left.
You wonder when Americans will finally reach a tipping point, but I think the problem is that everybody I talk to, because most of the people I talk to are doing at least well enough, and they're not. You have to have experience it yourself. I think most people, unfortunately, do.
Right. Well, you know, now you've got all. You know, it's the time of the year where every store has, you know, from Walmart to Walgreens, you know, free flu shots. Okay. Get 20% off your groceries and get your flu shot.
And you're free. It's a flu shot.
Right. And, you know, and my contention is, especially they say if you're over 50, right? My contention is, you know, I know you're over 50. God knows I am. But my contention is they would love to kill all seniors off
one
way or the other. Number one, because we remember a different America. Two, because we know civics and we're always involved in it, actually taught it in school, which it isn't anymore. And to them, you know, we're a drain on the system, but I don't think we're a drain on the system as much as we are a threat to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, so many of these things you see in today's world, I mean, you hear so many things about that come out of the movie Minority Report, where they're trying to identify criminals before they commit crimes. I mean, so obviously the Orwellian aspects are everywhere. I mean, you know, the thought police, I mean, everything from 1984 is out there. But when you hear, you know, things like about old people and all the eugenics cysts that are out there, and I, you know, I've written about that and talked about all, especially all the good liberals from the past, even people I like, Nikola Tesla, one of my favorite people all the time, he was a eugenicist. This is a line of thought that a lot of them had, where they wanted to weed out the, you know, the people that weren't up to snuff.
Well, that's what Hitler did. He started out with his own, his what he considered defective Germans.
Yeah, and it's always caged in terms like that. Well, we're trying to make things better for, you know, we want better people. But and how do you define that? You know, maybe you know, they may look at us and say, well, you know, you're thinking.
Well, yeah, it's according to whatever their, you know, WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant selves think is less than them, which is pretty much everybody.
Yeah, you're not, you don't quite fit in. You know, your thinking's not. Something's wrong up there. So we need to weed your kind out too.
But. Exactly. And that's what I say, you know, constantly, you know, people want to argue against the, you know, the migrants coming from the southern border. And I'm like, listen, that's how most people got in this country. You know, my grandparents came in through Ellis Island, you know, but, you know, if you weren't one of the original, you know, genocidal maniacs that landed and killed 3 million Native Americans, I guess they don't count you as an American.
No, well, I think that you're looking at, we have to look at this point at numbers. We're not looking at numbers. We're not looking at the reality anyway. And certainly more poor people coming in the country is just, they're entering at the very bottom of that 50% that has nothing. So what are they doing? They're expanding that 50% because they're not, no one coming in, no, I mean, maybe not even the H-1B visas and people that are, you know, that are coming in and taking over the where I worked in IT, they're not being paid what Americans were being paid for. So they're all serving to lower wages and diminish standards of living for everyone. And at some point, that's why they push this this Chinese kind of expectations, where they would really like young people to be moving into bunk beds and living there in little cubicles like they do in China. This is what they want for Americans, and they're pushing it all the time.
Well, that's also, you can go to Agenda 2021. And I mean, they make it very clear that this is their goal, especially since right now I would have to say that the middle class is dead. I've been warning against the destruction of the middle class for a long time, but I would say right now, looking at the stats, they've succeeded in killing the middle class.
No, and what's left of the middle class, people like us maybe that are hanging on by our fingernails, are being squeezed out from the bottom by poor immigrants coming in that are increasing that bottom and lowering wages, and visa workers, and by AI technology, which no one except Andrew Yang kind of talked about it, but no one's talking about how many millions of jobs are going to be lost to that. And again, our leaders, that's what I talk about, the corruption and the incompetence. In the past, they would have found a corrupt way that they would have benefited from, but they would have come up with some kind of way to, okay, we have to do something about this. In 1938, they grudgingly, thanks to people like Huey Long on the left, my hero, constantly lobbying for a 20 or 30 or even 20-hour work week, we got the 40-hour work week. So you need something, because at this point, we should probably have a 10-hour work week based on the number of people, the productivity, and the wealth that is out there. The people have no idea. You think, when you talked earlier about, we don't have the money for this, you know, we don't have the money to fix our infrastructure, even that's been 60 years. We don't have the money for food stamps or people help people, anything like that. But we always have the money for, you know, if we have to go bomb Syria or whatever, we always have the money for that. We always find that.
Right.
And obviously, we always find money for Israel and Saudi Arabia and all the countries that we give foreign aid to. But we don't want to help our own kind that are desperately needed, and we're not looking at the math here. The math here is that we already have, and despite the Republican propaganda, which I just, oh, it's just insensitive, this new talking point that they have, that they're, for the first time in history, they're more jobs than job seekers, which is an absolute lie. Absolute lie.
Right. I mean, and the jobs that are crappy, you know, low wage paying jobs.
Right, but even those are not, they're not, I just, as an experiment years ago, I tried when my kids were young, because they would tell me that you don't believe how hard it is to get into Kmart or something. You almost, first of all, you have to apply online for all those terrible retail jobs that pay nothing and have no benefits, and you usually have to go answer a quiz, which is sometimes hundreds of questions long.
Right.
And it's psychological in nature. I wouldn't know how to answer them. It's crazy. And these are for really bad jobs.
I know. And you can't, and then you have no way of ever getting contacted by them because a million people are doing the same thing. Don, we need to take a break. Stay with us, Donald, and I will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Noll Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Okay, I'm back with Donald Jeffries. If you're not familiar with his work, I have lots of interviews with him in the archives for new listeners. So go in, put his name in, and there you'll have it, and where you can really get deep understanding of what we're talking about today. And with bouncing around, and I almost forgot about your book, Hidden History, so I'm glad you brought that one up. Survival of the Richest, Crimes and Cover-Up in American Politics, 1776, 1963. You know, the other night I watched It's a Wonderful Life, Donald, with my granddaughter, who never saw it. And Jimmy Stewart's character starts out, it's 1919, 100 years ago today. And at the end of it, I had a good discussion with her. I said, what's changed? She said, there's just a lot more Mr. Potters.
That's brilliant, yeah.
So, now when you want to look at what we were talking about before the break, you know, whether it's the migrants coming in or whether they're coming in with real visas, work visas, undercutting our salaries, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, how so many people don't want the migrants coming in across the border. They don't want any more immigrants, blah, blah, blah. But Americans are not having children, okay? Our population is shrinking. And I would say it's directly connected to the economy, okay? That's my thought. I think that's the number one reason. No one can afford to have children except the ignorant who don't even know what birth control is. A lot of people putting off having kids till they're older, much older, if at all. And then, of course, let's not leave out the shrinking testosterone levels in this country and the uptick in infant mortality and mothers dying giving birth. So what do you do when you need people, when you need workers, okay? Why block off people when we're not replacing the amount of people that aren't being born or the people that die every month?
Well, I think you hit on something that I probably should have talked about in Survival of the Richest, and I talk about now, and that is one thing I found that most people don't think about, but up until when women started entering the workforce in large numbers, it was probably maybe the 70s, I guess. But up until that point, almost all husbands that had a family could support as many kids as they wanted to. They didn't have to have 2 kids. As many kids as they wanted, the wife could stay at home, be a stay-at-home mom and all that. And they seemed to have a better standard of living, but you would think logically, that, again, the math doesn't add up. At the time women started entering the workforce, shouldn't that have meant, at least for married couples, shouldn't all of their purchasing power and their standard of living doubled because they suddenly had 2 incomes?
Yeah, but women were making bupkis and they still had to pay for child care, which
exactly.
Was always expensive.
Obviously, it didn't work out that way because that would have been a positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they suddenly every family had double the income.
Right.
But it didn't happen that way. In fact, with the increased cost of living, and you said child support and all that, child care and all that, it ended up being that suddenly, even with both parents working, they were struggling, and it got to the point where it is now today, where 70-some percent of people are living paycheck to paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And those 70-some percent also have don't have $500 in savings or whatever it is. And these are the statistics that nobody talks about. Bernie Sanders alludes to it a little bit here or there, but I just don't think any issue is more important than that, because you can't have a first world country.
All right.
If half your people have nothing, and it's undeniable. The stats you said earlier, right in line with what I've been quoting for years, about 50% of the country making less than $27,000, having less than 1% of the collective wealth, even things like the stock market.
Right.
And I have stock, thank goodness, because I had a 401k, but I'm in a small minority. Most people don't realize
that. I don't have an 80-something percent of Americans are not in the stock market.
That's right. I think it's 10% of the country owns 90% of the stock or something. So it's when we talk about the stock market as an indication of how the economy's doing,
yeah,
it's really,
the,
yeah, I watch it because I don't, you know, that's where most of my little egg is, nest egg is.
That's
important to me. But most people, it's irrelevant. If the stock market crashes, it's not going to change their lives.
It won't change mine. I hate to say it won't change mine a drop.
Oh, yeah. So it's as far as the, now it will ruin people like me that are in kind of that bottom tier clinging on there and just happen to be, yeah. I worked at a place so long that I had a 401k and worked long enough to have something in there. But for the vast majority of people, it's not going to matter to them.
Of course
and
not. So, and don't forget, you know, a lot of people don't realize that it's perfectly legal for Congress to benefit from insider trading.
Sure. And we, there's how much evidence. I mean, going back to Joe Kennedy, when he ran the stock commission, because he could see it. You know, he understood that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And people, they've been manipulating the stock market forever, from the Great Depression on.
Well, what an article bursted free today. You probably haven't seen it yet, but it was off Vanity Fair, who said that there's mysterious traders that made $3.5 billion off stock bets that were timed to Trump's trade war. So, you know, Trump's been manipulating the market all along. You know, one day we got a deal with China, one day we don't. Today, you know, the first thing this morning, we have a deal with China. Second part of the day, they're just going to buy soybeans. Oh, Trump's renegotiating, rethinking it. And every time he tweets, which today he's over 100 tweets already, the market shifts. So people, you know, when I saw this article in Vanity Fair about people making a lot of money, timing it to Trump's, I think, more his tweets than his trade wars. And of course, it reminded me of the people that had those put options on 9/11 that made a fantastic amount of money on the death of, you know, over 2,000 Americans.
Well, think about how scary that is, that one man, regardless of what you think about Trump, even if he was a stable personality,
mm-hmm.
but being the kind of personality he is even more frightening, but that he could control something like that with his stupid tweets. I mean,
right.
That's just amazing to me. But,
right, but you remember right away they took away Obama's little phone and whatever the social media apps were in those days. He couldn't use them.
But here we
got Trump doing whatever he wants, threatening world countries, threatening Congress. Every minute of every day, by the way, Twitter, which of course also permanently banned me, has no problem keeping him on Twitter.
What would we, really, how would we even assess Trump up to this point? If just imagine a Trump presidency without Twitter.
It would be wonderful.
What would we even
talk about? It would be heaven on earth. It would be heaven on earth. You know, I walked into the gym.
He's the tweeter in chief, because if you
take
out Twitter, what else is he? I mean,
he's the twit of all. He's the twit.
Right.
His rallies are insane. This last one I watched.
Again, I've never seen it. He's changed so much because it's like.
I honestly believe he's in deep throes of some brain disease.
Yeah, some people think that. I just prefer to think that that this is all an act. I don't know.
Yeah, but he never acted this badly. Okay. Yeah. I mean, when you sit down and you watch the president ramble on about 10 or 15 toilet flushes and how water comes down and it's called rain, I mean, it's shocking to me. It's shocking to me that this is still in office. Someone this ignorant and obviously having some sort of Alzheimer's, syphilis, God knows what, meltdown of his brain.
Even the everything around him, like you, I mean, I talk to people about this all the time. I don't believe for a second that he drinks 12 Diet Cokes a day and he lives off fast food, because he's over 70 and he's obese. How could he be alive then?
I don't know. Cholesterol has cheated us all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's mythology, and I think so much of it is mythology.
Some people have posited, a lot of shrinks have already, you know, come out with their opinion, but a lot of people have posited that he might be having small mini strokes.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, even as, and then you talked about the whole fake news thing, and now, because he's right in the middle of it, it breaks down where no matter what happens, one side or the other doesn't believe it.
Exactly.
There is no source that everybody believes in.
Well, but now he's made that a worldwide phenomenon, because you have all the other dictators around the world crying fake news, from Netanyahu to Bolsonaro.
And he latched on to something that, again, is obvious to all of us who have watched how the mainstream media covers everything up. So that was something out there waiting. There was an audience waiting for that. And the problem is now it's being used by both sides, and everything is, even something like when Trump was booed at the World Series or whatever, even that broke down to what was the tape manipulated. I mean, and you get that with everything now.
Well, what about Trump's head on Rocky Balboa's body?
Well, yeah, the Rock, yeah.
And the Republicans defending it, saying it wasn't photoshopped.
But
I mean, what kind of world is this? the survival of the sanest might be the best.
You know, who is thinking of that? That's a political move.
Well, what about this week? I mean, I don't watch the series they were talking about where they put out a video of him as the supervillain Thanos slaughtering Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats.
I can't, you know.
Listen, I'm 70 years old. I've been alive since Harry Truman, okay? I only remember, though, presidents from Eisenhower up. Never have I seen anything like this. If everybody's not in fear for their country right now, they're not paying attention.
Well, and I think, again, but that's why I think we need to, the big question to ask is what happens after Trump? Because this, I don't think it ever, I think this has been changed forever.
I agree.
Because I think all future candidates will emulate him in some way.
Well, I don't know about emulate, but let's just say, you know, remember, Jesus, what was his name? That good-looking guy that ran for president, John Edwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
As soon as they exposed that he had an affair, he was out of the race. Okay. Now we could get Charles Manson, we could get Jeffrey Epstein from the grave to run, and still compare him to everything that they let slide with Trump.
Yeah, well, and I think, again, it's the standards have been lowered. I think they're lowered all across the board. I think you're going to – politics has been we looked at that movie, The Idiocracy, and so much of it is coming to play.
Well,
because,
you know, the man that produced that film said he never intended it to be a documentary.
Exactly. And it's – you know, I don't know, Marie. It's and that's why, you know, I'm just hoping, trying to point out the past to people so that they realize – how a lot of this, although Trump really, that's why I stopped making predictions, because I did not see the election of Trump. I don't think anybody did. And so ever since
It wasn't an election. We haven't had an election in this country in decades. Okay.
No, I don't think anybody saw that coming. So I have no idea what they have planned. All I know is that whatever happens in this country, whoever's in office, whatever happens is not going to be doing anything to benefit. That's why, you know, one of the quotes in the book I found that I was amazed at. I didn't know anything about William Henry Harrison, our shortest-lived president that only served 32 days. But he left a great quote on the record. And this is the 1830s or whatever. Said, you know, I've come to the conclusion that after a lifetime in politics, that everything that's done in politics is done to make the rich richer and the poor poorer.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And that was then. So, I mean, and I think, I look at it like that, that everything is done to benefit the same people. And that's why things like the infrastructure don't get, because the infrastructure would be something that everyone would benefit from. So,
right.
I mean,
create real jobs. Let's not leave
that
out. I mean, I'm sure you're following that, you know, the biggest trucking corporation in America went bankrupt this week. I think something like 350 big trucking outfits have gone bankrupt the past year.
Yeah. Just think that. I mean, that's,
yeah, how are we going to get our stuff? Okay. How are we going to get our stuff?
We already know millions of people are going to, would lose their job to automated truckers. So,
right.
You know, nobody looks at these things because if it doesn't, again, they look at things like the stock market, which applies to very few people. They look at job creation, which, again, it doesn't, as you said, most of the jobs have always been. And that, Obama, this is why I said the two-party thing. Is if you look at, again, the personalities are obviously way different.
Well, but, intelligence levels, too. Let's not leave that.
Yeah, out. Yeah. If you look at even something like that Baghdadi guy or whatever, that ridiculous thing that they dropped it real quick, but I had never heard of the guy. They killed him like 12 times already.
Right, right. There's always a new leader of 9/11. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, that whole thing was almost word for word the same script that Obama and the White House used for Bin Laden. I mean, even down to the staged White House photo, it's like.
Exactly. At least they staged their photo better than Trump did.
So, yeah, I mean,
got to give them credit. They were better at staging the bullshit that they throw at us every day. But, you know, here we got another situation, and, you know, we're going to have to pick this conversation up in depth at another time because we only have about 5 minutes left. But just last week, we had three shootings at three of our naval bases.
Right.
Okay, no one talked about the one in Texas that happened 2 days after the one in Pensacola. Then, of course, Pearl Harbor. And when I, of course, I look at Pearl Harbor, the first thing I thought of was the bombing of Pearl Harbor with full knowledge of FDR after we had broken the codes, weeks after we knew what was going to happen. And when people say, oh, your government wouldn't kill its own people, they have no idea of real history, obviously. And it was okay to take them out then. So now we have people from these psychotic countries exposed as being in all our training schools and military schools. We train them to go commit atrocities in their own country. And they're attacking us now from the inside out. My sense is, what's the bigger plan here?
Yeah, and that's why, and that's when you're talking about something like Pearl Harbor, and I go back even further than that. The book, I go back to the 1898, which is the first false flag in the Spanish-American War. Remember the Maine? Mm-hmm. We used it in the World War One, Louisitania as well.
Right.
And then Pearl Harbor was, I think, the classic example of the most successful false flag,
mm-hmm.
because no one really questioned it for a very long time. And then it's instructive to realize what happens to people inside the establishment that decide to become so-called extremist. John Toland was a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian, wrote a big biography about Hitler, and was accepted by the court historians in good standing. He wrote the book Infamy in the early 1980s, where he exposed, and there was no question about that Roosevelt had prior knowledge, and that everyone at the top of the government, along with Churchill, was doing anything to get us into the war under any pretense, because America was dead. So that's why I hated when they associated the America First movement with Nazism, when the America First movement, as I show in the book, was run almost exclusively by classical liberals like me,
mm-hmm.
like John T. Flynn. And one of the things that are lost in people that I was shocked to discover is that John T. Flynn, who was the head of the New York chapter of the America First Committee, his career was ruined. And again, this is out there on the record.
Right.
And wrote letters to newspapers that said, don't hire this guy.
Right, right.
This is the United States. I mean,
that was nothing compared to what Trump puts out against his enemies.
Right.
You know, like Trump, Roosevelt ran on the promise, the campaign promise, that he wasn't going to get us into war.
Right, right. I'll say it again and again and again. Okay,
right.
Yeah,
so every time Trump says, well, if it wasn't for me, we'd be in war with North Korea. Well, I say give it time.
We managed to not be at war with Korea for a long time, North Korea for a long time. But, and as you know, even that, the North Korean thing, all of that, and I talk about this in the book, that after this war, and I describe all the atrocities, the Allied atrocities, the bombing of Dresden, which killed like 38,000 toddlers, things. These are the good guys that did this.
Mm-hmm.
No military significance at all. But it gets lost in, well, you know, Hitler and the Nazis, and that's it. Okay, well, that doesn't excuse what we did. But after the war, then we suddenly transitioned into this Cold War. And that's really what built the military-industrial complex. And I analyze it a lot in this book, where I talk about how phony it was.
Right.
Because the entire thing, and you know, and that's why I manage the, I think, the really kind of exceptional balancing act where I come out in the book where I'm defending Joe McCarthy and the Rosenbergs, because I think they both were kind of victims of the Cold War in different ways. But you under Truman and Korea, you had this sudden, you know, okay, we're gonna confront the Soviets indirectly, never directly, and we're gonna divide the Korea up, and then later they did even more effectively in Vietnam. And we're going to kind of have our sides fight each other. It's almost we're manipulating them from the, you know, the ports of the plantation or something. And it was really just an awful thing, because everybody that died in Korea, everybody that died in Vietnam, died absolutely nothing. And
all the boys and girls that died in Afghanistan and Iraq and the rest is all a waste. But Donald, I hate to say it, we're out of time. So we're going to have to do this again, if you don't mind, which I know you don't.
Always happy to talk with you.
Well, it's always happy to talk to somebody who understands things from both sides, which is a good thing. So thanks again, and we'll talk soon, Don.
Okay, Maria. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Donald Jeffries, check out his work, Crimes and Cover-Up in American Politics, 1776-1963. He's working on a new book. And, of course, Survival of the Richest, which I can't say enough about. So thanks for supporting the show. I'll be back next week with Awaken with Maria and Monica, the news. And I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.